When we last left off, we were talking about the concept of those takanos, gzeros, and minhagim, which rise to the level of a davar shebeminyan. And we mentioned the Mishnah in Adios and the Halacha in the Rambam Hilchos Mamrim, and the general concept that in order to remove a davar shebeminyan, the latter based in would need to be greater than the first based in both Chochma and Minyan, and we said as a practical matter this is virtually impossible to have in subsequent generations. It's important to point out again that we're talking here specifically about rabbinic enactments, Gzeros, Takanos, and Minhagim, and we're not talking about Machlokesin or Piskei Halacha when it comes to Din. Those areas are subject to machlokes and psak, and those things can be argued in each subsequent generation and dealt with differently by different poskim, the rules of which we'll discuss hopefully another time when we speak about Rishonim, Achronim, and their interaction. I just want to spend a little more time discussing this idea of Davar Shemini. If you recall last time we spoke, we discussed the Tshuva Nigros Moshe, dealing with the Zman of Hanukkah, the Zman that a woman is considered a Meinika, and how Moshe parsed out the general rule, which he said, yes, was a Davar Sheminyan, and then the details of that rule, which were not included in the so-called Minyan. We see very often that there are Gezeros, there are Takanos, that apply in one generation and yet don't apply later. So how is that to be understood? If we say that a ruling which is instituted by a Beis Din as a Takana or a Gezeira cannot be undone by a later Beis Din unless it's greater than the previous one in Chochma Minyan, which we said is essentially impossible, then how does this come to pass? So let's take a look at a couple of instances and we'll see that in some cases it's really built into the Takana itself, or the Gzeir itself. The thing we discussed last time about the Meinika, we understood that there's always going to be a reason to protect the interest of the infant child. However, some Takanos, or some Gzeiros, might be very specific to a very particular time and or place, and once we're not dealing with that time or place, that Takana or Gzeira really would have no applicability, in which case it would make more sense that such a gzera takana would fall away. But again, we would need a basis for saying that, and the truth is, we find such an idea already in the Rishonim. So, just by way of example, if one looks at Tosafos in Maseches Beitza on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, Dibra Maskol V'Ha'idna, Tosafos explain that at the time of Chazal, there was a certain nation of Gentiles for whom the Jews had to work and be subservient. And when it was Yom Tov, they would give them off. They would force them to work. When it was Yom Tov, they would give them off. And the concern was now that if they would start burying their dead on Yom Tov Sheni, what would happen? They would say, oh, we see you're working, so you'll have to do all kinds of work. We don't have this nation, we don't have this situation anymore, this particular relationship. Mutter. And now Tosafos specifically address our concern. What do you mean that now you could do kvura on Yom Tov Sheni and we're not worried about the concern that maybe Jews will be forced to do other types of malacha just because that particular situation doesn't apply? If you tell me that Chazal instituted that prohibition of doing kvura on Yom Tov Sheni for that reason, then l'chora should be a gzeira takana, which would be unable to be undone. But Tosafos say, ve'ein lomar shetzarech minyan achel hatira. And don't tell me that this needs another minyan to undo it. The kevan the zehatam mishem chshasha the avra hachshasha avra hatam. Basically, this it was built into the takana. It was built into the enactment that it was predicated on this mitzias, and once that mitzias no longer exists, the whole thing fell apart. So it was contingent on that mitzias. It was for a chashash. So the, if you will, the takana or the gzeir was kol zman that this chashash applies, this is the way you must act. So it was court, it was conditional. And this is not the only instance where we find this. We find this time and time again. Just a couple of examples. Another Tosos, this time in Maseches Brachos on Daf Nun Gimel, in discussing Mayim Achronim and the famous drasha Vis Kadishtem Visem Kedoshim, Chazal say Vihisem Kedoshim Eilam Mayim Achronim. Tosos say Dafka Lahem. Once upon a time, Tosos claim that in the time of Chazal, there was a certain type of salt which was very dangerous. If it would get in one's eye, it could cause blindness. And during that time, they made a takana, made a gzeira, lest a person put this salt in his or her eye, they must wash their hands after eating to prevent that. So Tosos say, well, if the whole Gezeirah Takana was predicated on that type of salt, aval anu she'ein melech sedomus motzli beinenu, in the Middle Ages, this type of salt was unknown, ve'ein anu regilin li tol achar asuda, and therefore people don't generally make a point of washing, ein hanitila ma'akevas aleinu, therefore the washing is not of absolute necessity, according to Tosos. Okay, other opinions argue and say that it's not only based on the idea of Melech Sdomus, but Ech Sheyiyah, you see from this Tosfos that taking for granted that it was in part based on Melech Sdomus, you see that the Takana or Gzeira falls away once that Melech Sdomus no longer is a concern. So here again, you have a Chashash. Chashash is based on a specific Mitzias, but once that Mitzias no longer exists, then the whole enactment ceases to be an issue. Tosos again in Maseches Beitza on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, this time dealing with various activities on Shabbos. One of those things that we're told should not be done on Shabbos is clapping and dancing. Ein metapchin vein meraktin. Pirush Rashi say Tosos shem yitaken kli shir. It's a well-known Tosos. Tosos say umihu lididon shari. Once upon a time, this was prohibited, lest a person who is now engaged in dancing and clapping gets so caught up in that activity that he'll want to fix his instrument when his instrument gets broken. That will be also to do on Shabbos, obviously. So if that will happen, it'll be in violation of malacha. So we avoid that activity. We avoid dancing and clapping to avoid being metaken kli shir. So Tosos say, again, by the time the Middle Ages came around, apparently Jews were no longer so well-versed in the art of fixing instruments. They're no longer bekiyin in making instruments. So therefore, it wasn't shaykh to have that concern. That it wasn't necessary to have that geder. Mihu l'didon shari d'davka b'yamehen shayu bekiyin lasos kli shir shaykh l'megzar. It makes sense to have that gezera. Aval l'didon, you know, that whole gzeira doesn't apply in this generation. So again, not a regular Dover Sheba Minyan, which was a hard and fast rule, but something that was conditioned on a specific mitzias, according to Tosos. A third place where Tosos raises the same svara, the same logic, is found in Maseches Avodah Zarah. In discussing Giloy, Tosos in Maseches Avodah Zarah, in Daf Lamed Hey, Amid Aleph, say, Me'achar she'eino omeid, Ela vadai ein hatam ela mishum nikor va'anu shein nechashim mitzuyin beinenu ein lochash mishim giloi. We don't have to be concerned about snakes coming and leaving venom behind. Ve'ein lomar de'davar shebeminyano. We don't say, well, since once upon a time this was a prohibition, so therefore it always remains a prohibition. I'll just mention tangentially that the Gra, I believe in the Maaser Rav, it's recorded that his practice was to continue to be particular about this for various reasons, but we'll set that aside for now. Tosfos take the position that Giloy was not a Dovah Shebe Minyan, didn't need Minyan Acher Lahatiro. Kivade hu kisha asu tchila lo asu elo b'makom shenechashim metzuyin. It's specifically predicated on Nechashim Mitzuyin, but in a place where there's no Nechashim Mitzuyin, that would no longer be the case. So again, you have Shitas Tosos here now in a number of places. You have Tosos in Brachos regarding the Mayim Achronim, Tosos in Maseches Beitza regarding clapping, Tosos in Avodah Zarah that we just mentioned regarding Giloy. We had the Tosos earlier regarding Kura and Yom Tov Sheni. Many other cases as well, where you see, even though this is a rabbinic takana, we're not talking about a din, we're not talking about a rule that's min haTorah, we're talking about a rabbinic enactment, and yet, it's possible some enactments may not be subject to the general rule of kol davar shebeminyan tzarich minyan acher lahatiro. Those are the types of takanos or gezeiros which were really conditional at the point of their institution. So that's important to keep in mind when we consider this idea of things not being subject to change if they are takanos or gzeros. That's only certain types of takanos or gzeros, meaning those which are davar sheba minyan. Now, every once in a while, we'll also come across a machlokas on whether or not something is, in fact, a davar sheba minyan. So let's spend a few moments talking about one such instance. When it comes to the requirement of Chalav Yisrael and the prohibition of Chalav Akum, so there is a Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash is in Siman Kuf Tes Vav, Sif Katan Vav, where he says the following Chiddush. I'm reading the middle of a much longer discussion, really towards the end of Sifkat and Vav. He says, HaKlal HaOle, Dibi'ir Shalo Nimtza Sham Chalav Tameh. So in a city where there's no Chalav Tameh, meaning there are no non-kosher animals which are being milked, Oh, Shehi Yoser B'Yoker, or maybe there are animals like that, but that milk is much more expensive, Me Chalav Tahar, Mutter luknos me ha'akum chalav shechalva below re'iyas Yisrael. Basically, where you have a monetary basis, pecuniary basis, for, we'll say, knowing that the Gentile is not giving you the milk of a non-kosher animal, even though you didn't see, as the halacha would generally require, the Gentile milking the animal, it would still be permitted. The Chaim Matzatzi says the Pri Chadash Haminog Poshut Po in Amsterdam. The Chaim Nahagti Ani Gamkein Zulas Ksas Yechidim Hanis Harim Bezeh. So okay, it's true there are some Yechidi school who are particular about this, but in general, this was the prevalent custom. Aval Be'ir Shenim Tosham Chalav Tamei. But in a place where non-kosher milk is benimtza, even though this particular Gentile doesn't have that in his flock, maybe there's non-kosher milk in the pail from a previous milking, you'll have to see the entire process, either like a regular kashra standard, you come in, you come out, you pop in, give the person a mirsas, or you basically set up a situation where he can't go and get other animals without you noticing it. chalav tomei le'arvo imzeh, halav achi afilu b'diavad aser. But if that's not the case, if you didn't create either of those situations, then this will indeed be aser. But what we have here is essentially a forerunner to the famous psak of the Igros Moshe. Moshe held that in a situation where you know that the milk that you're getting is cow milk and it's not coming from a non-kosher animal, that you could drink it and treat it as Chol Yisrael, even though you didn't see the process. How is that possible? The rabbinic takana or gezeira was that you had to see the process. Well, Rav Moshe said this is called knowing. Rav Moshe said this is actual knowing. So you do have the equivalent of seeing the milking process. What the Kri Chadash is saying, slightly different, is that apparently this is not a davarsha b'minyan. So where you could avoid the concern, the gezeira doesn't apply. Where the concern of tarovas, of non-kosher milk, can be avoided, the gezeira is inapplicable, essentially in line with the Tosafot that we quoted a few minutes ago. He says a little bit earlier, this is about the halfway mark, v'im ha'ya din cholov k'gvina, if cholov had the same status as gvina, i.e. davar shebeminyan, shel goyim, ha'ya lanu lesser kol cholov shecholvo goy, v'ein Yisrael roehu, after lekach shat tarovis, mishem lo plug, doesn't matter. This is the gzir, this is the takana. Elevadai kid amran, but rather you must say, as he said earlier, v'nemtzini lemeidin shedino mamash kedin morya shel goyim she'asruhu mishum tarovas yayin v'hayayin b'yoker, where there's no concern that non-kosher wine is being mixed in because it's much more expensive, hachanami im chalav tamei eino nimtza b'mokom echad, if there's no non-kosher milk there, o shenimtza ela shehu yoser b'yoker michalav tahar ein leso sham chalav shechalav goyi shechalav goyi v'in yisrael roehu ela mutar leilech v'liknos me'a goyim chol shehem v'chema tzatzi l'rad vaz b'tshuva b'simen ayin hei. So he says, again, this is a certain type of gzeir. What's the gzeir? The gzeir is one based on a certain metzias. No metzias, no gzeir. Very consistent with those tosas in which we discussed earlier. However, as we said, sometimes this is the very issue. Is it or is it not a davar shebeminyan? So the Kri Chadash takes the position that it's not a davar shebeminyan. Let us now take a look at a Chasam Sofer who makes the strong argument that this, in fact, is a davar shebeminyan, in which case there's no room to negotiate. So at the end of the day, this is a separate issue in Machlokas HaPoskim, but the point I'm hoping to make is that there are different types of rabbinic enactments. So when one asks, are rabbinic enactments a function of time and place such that they may change over time? The answer is, well, it depends. It depends what type of gezeira we're talking about. Are we talking about something where there was a specific concern which was built in to the gezeira, a chashash, a satana, something that was a function of time and place, then yes, in many cases, those gezeiros fall apart on their own. The Chasam Sofer is in Yoredeya Simen Kuf Zayin, referring to the Tshuvas now. So it says Tshuvas Chasam Sofer, Yoredeya Kuf Zayin. And he's talking about this very issue, Chol Yisrael. Apparently, the interlocutor, the one that sent the Chassam Sofer this question, the Shaila, specifically brought up this issue. Is Cholov, when we say Cholov, the prohibition of Cholov Akum and the requirement of Chol Yisrael, conversely, is that a Darvish of Minyan? E Cholov Ne'esob a Minyan, Afilu Mokom Uzman She'ein Behema Tmeya Haruya Lachlov Matzoy Beinayam, Kibizman Umakomos Elu Sheha Behemos Hatmeyma Matsuyim Gam Hagoyim Memasim Chalvam. Is it or is it not a Dover Sheh Beminyan? So, Me'ata, skipping a large part of the tshuva, but at the end he writes, Me'ata chalav shechavu nachri ve'in yisro ro'ehu asura aleinu isur do'oraisa idir albonin kemavur la'el paritz gedi yashchenu nachash ach masher kalsav ma'aloscha sha'afila nuzhar mikol makom nasa lehem keheter ve'kechoma prutza liknos mipalter pa'ayi, saying another related issue here about pas, but Chassam Sofer makes the point that it was very much Ne'asar B'minyan, as he says earlier, Afilu Cholev Lagabin Kach Ne'asar B'minyan. And therefore, if you violate this, yes, you're violating Takana D'Rabbanan, you're violating Takana D'Rabbanan, but you're also violating the Torah mandate to follow the rabbinic enactments. But this, in his estimation, is a Davar Sheh B'minyan, unlike the position of the Pri Chadash. In which case, if you don't comport to the dictates of the Takana, even though you could somehow otherwise verify that there's no non-kosher milk, you're violating the Takana. So the Pri Chadash and the Chassam Sofer would both agree fundamentally that something that's a Davar Sheh B'minyan needs to be treated one way, something which is not Davar Sheh B'minyan has a different standard. Here they happen to be arguing over whether or not this particular thing is in fact a Davar Sheh B'minyan or not. We'll just conclude with mentioning two other gzeros, which I guess are appropriate seasonally to mention. One is pertinent to a season which just passed, and one is pertinent to a season which is fast approaching. So first, regarding the halacha, or the rabbinic gezerah, that we don't use nesarim, we don't use boards that are three tefachim wide for schach, because then they have the appearance of a tikra. They violate the concern of ke'ein tikra. So Daki Moshe, in commenting on the tour in Siman Tov Resh Chaf Tes, quotes from the Hagos Maimni, this is Sifkan Tes, quotes the Hagos Maimon, is saying the imsikech ben asarim afilu pachos migimel psula. There, an argument can be made that even if you're going to use boards which are less than three tefachim wide, the havi kebayis mamish, because it still smacks of a roof. That's what the Hagos Maimon felt in his time. The havi kebayis mamish hoyel b'zman hazeh kulan mesachkin batehem ben asarim she'in bahem gag. Now, in order to maintain that, you'd have to say that the Gezeirah the Rabbanon wasn't Davar Sheh B'minyan. Again, it wasn't specifically on three tefachim. It was somehow on Ke'ein Tikra. You can't roof your sukkah with something that is Ke'ein Tikra. You can't violate that rule forever. Now, what is and what is not Ke'ein Tikra? Okay, that might change based on time and place. But the Gezeirah itself, the Takan itself, not to use things which are technically mutter, but would somehow smack of tikra, that will always apply. As to what falls into that category, that may change based on time and place. And something else now pertinent to Hanukkah, and with this will perhaps conclude this discussion for now. This is something that's a much bigger discussion, perhaps. But when it comes to the proper placement of one's Neros Chanukah, one's Ner Chanukah, and we've discussed this in the past, where exactly should it be lit? So we know, once upon a time, Chanukah candles were lit outside, either at the opening of the chatzer, or at the opening of one's residence, depending upon the orientation, or maybe in some cases in a window. Gemara goes through a whole series of cases based on where you live within a building. But the Gemara also says, "Bizmanas b'shasa sakana meinicho al shulchano v'dayo." When there's a sakana in putting the candles outside, because Gentiles might not take kindly to that and might treat us poorly as a result, we say at that point in time, the candle can be lit on the table. And the question becomes, what does that mean? Now we live in a time and place, generally speaking, where people can light, if they wanted to, outside. But the question is, what happens to the ability to light outside? I think we spoke about in the past that Dvar Yehoshua in Chelek Aleph writes pretty strongly against this. He says when he came to Yerushalayim, he was shocked to see that people lit outside. And he says, the Gemara said, Mishasa Sakana, Minicho Al Shulchana Vadayo. And he understood that to mean that Mishasa Sakana, there was a takana made, so to speak, where in the place of Ner Chanukah was changed forevermore. And therefore, candles should be lit inside, even in a place and time when we enjoy relative good relations with our Gentile neighbors and we're not fearful for any repercussions from lighting outside. Others understand that somewhat differently and understand that, like those cases in the Tosafot, and like the Pri Chadash understood the issue of the Chalav, that it's based on circumstance. So here you have another instance where you have one posik, the Dvar Yeshua, is saying that's basically a takana, a gzera, can't be tampered with, unless you have a basin which is greater than the first in Chochma Minyan, which we said is impossible. And on the other hand, you have other poskim who make the argument, no, b'shasa sakana meant during the time of sakana, that's when you couldn't light outside. But once the sakana was removed, then the takana fell apart on its own. So that, again, boils down to a machlokas haposkim, whether yes or not, whether it was or was not a davar shel minyan, similar to machlokas between the Chasam Sofer and the Pri Chadash. So I hope this has been somewhat instructive in explaining when we don't say that things are fixed and when things may be subject to change over time. So obviously a much bigger discussion, but I'll hope that at least as a broad perspective, this discussion, now a two-part discussion, has been helpful. And hopefully in the not-too-distant future, we're going to move over to discuss some of the mechanics of machlokas. Okay, we'll stop here. I wish everyone a good night.